today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Booking.com makes a move that might ultimately help do away with resort fees for travelers. And Rome says if you can't behave, there will be consequences.
Airports are always busy places, and even more so during summer travel season. Mark spends a lot of time at the airports, and at 320, he once again reminds us how valuable a few extra minutes can be when you're flying.
Fake reviews are a plague on the travel industry. So what do we do about it? How do you spot fake reviews? Chris Elliott is here at 335 to help us find our way.
Code share, common travel phrase, but what does it mean? Gwen Duncan dissects airline code shares and helps us understand what the heck they're all about. That's coming up at 350.
Updated travel news, information to make you a smarter traveler, it's what we do. We are the Travel Guys.
And oh, by the way, happy Father's Day.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
To Alaska, I go north to Russia's own.
All our bond and man.
I come from a la-la-la-la.
I bless the rains down in Africa.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Well, yes, happy Father's Day once again. It is Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, as always, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, here to make you a smarter traveler. I'm in the studio here in Long Cal Expo, and Mark is about as far as you could get from here. He is at the far the far reaches of the old Cape Cod. Mark, ahoy.
Hey, hi there from Provincetown, which is, like you said, all the way out on the tip of the Cape. In fact, it's so far out. It's so far out, this is where the pilgrims stopped before they actually got to real landfall.
Yeah, there you go. Now, you know, I've never been to Cape Cod, but I know the song, you know? The sand dunes and the salty air and all. Does the song kind of, you know,
It does. It's a very different environment for people from Sacramento, people from California in particular, to come here. I think most people, it's always been a very good selling destination for sports leisure vacations. We come here once a year with a group of 25 people. I'm looking out on the bay right now from our hotel in Provincetown, where we are for a couple of nights. The group is over next door having dinner. They'll spend a day here. Yesterday we were sightseeing in Boston. Gosh, we saw so much stuff in Boston. We rode the swan boats in the Boston Common in the park there. The swan boats, yeah. And somebody out there is going, oh wow! Somebody from Boston right now is having a flashback. I'm certain of it. But anyway, we've had some little rainy today, but we'll enjoy Provincetown tomorrow, and then the group will head on down the Cape, and I'll be making my way back to Sacramento. So they'll be in good hands. But yes, this is a really spectacular place to come if you have to come in season in the summer. May I suggest that you try to come on the shoulder season, either about, like this is about the last week of shoulder season, or come starting the last week in August or in September. Mm-hmm. The weather is pretty good here and the rates are a little lower. And if you can avoid the weekends, you will find it much cheaper. You can either fly into Provincetown, you can rent a car and drive around, or my favorite way is to take the ferry and arrive on the dock in Provincetown. It's a very pedestrian-friendly city, so if this is your only destination, it's a great place just to walk off the dock right into town.
All righty. Well, Tom in studio, Mark at Cape Cod, and we always do at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, and we bring you up to date on the travel news. Mark, let's see what you got.
Well, Tom, major tourism destinations all around the world, but particularly in Italy, are really fed up with rowdy, disrespectful travelers. The mayor of Rome says, we don't want people to take a bath or ruin or dirty monuments anymore. They're tired with people disrobing themselves, basically treating sacred places like their living room. Rome City Center is an area protected by UNESCO. So they have passed some pretty serious rules, regulations, and laws now, the City Council of Rome has, which basically says if you don't behave in the inner city, not only are you going to get banned from the inner city, but you're going to get fined. Your name is going to go on a list. And if they catch you twice doing this stuff, why, then you're going to jail. So it's too bad to have to do this stuff, but people are not only ruining it for themselves, but ruining it for other people. Other Italian cities, Venice and Florence, have passed measures that will fine you for eating in inappropriate places or dressing inappropriately. So these folks are pretty serious about this. They're having trouble getting everybody's attention, but I suspect that Rome, if they actually crack down on this, they probably will get a little bit of compliance at least. Can you imagine that? I mean, we don't see that in New York City. I mean, of course, New York City's not the cleanest place on the planet to start with. But.
Yeah, I don't know. It mystifies me.
It does. It really does. Booking.com has done something here. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. They seem to be serious about this, which could alter the resort fee landscape forever. One of the reasons that hotels charge resort fees and resorts charge mm-hmm. resort fees is because that revenue is taxed differently than the room revenue, and also they don't have to pay commissions on it. When Booking.com sells you the Marriott Marquis in New York City, they only get a commission on the room rate. They don't get a commission on the $30 a night resort charge that you're getting, or destination fee, or whatever they're calling it at that particular property. So what Booking.com has said, look, if you're going to rip people off, we want our share. And one of the reasons for charging these fees is because you can kind of slide them in. You don't have to be real transparent about them. So Booking.com is saying, no, that doesn't work for us. I'm not a huge fan of Booking.com, but I think this is a terrific move. It's something that is very consumer friendly. Now, of course, you could go the other way and say, well, you know, they just want their share of this ill-gotten booty that's being gotten from travelers with all of these bogus resort fees. They just want to make sure they get their share. But it makes it a little less advantageous to the resorts and the hotels if it's done this way.
Yeah.
So maybe we will see some changes. United Airlines has announced. Yeah.
Yeah. How did you put that? If you're going to rip people off, we want our share. I'm going to write that down.
Well, I mean, that's kind of sort of what they're saying, is that if you're making this, I can't think of anybody on the planet who is in favor of resort fees. I mean, if you're charging $250 for your hotel and you're charging a $40 resort fee, why don't you just charge $290 for your hotel and be done with it? Because otherwise, it's just deceptive. And the reason it's deceptive is because, for a variety of financial reasons, maybe we should get a tax guy on the show sometime to explain to us exactly why this is so advantageous to these folks. But anyway, Booking.com is fighting back. Maybe they're only fighting back on their own behalf to increase their profits, or maybe they're fighting back on behalf of consumers, or maybe it's a little of each. United Airlines has introduced a new, what they call a connection saver tool. I experienced this in Denver the other day, and it's actually kind of cool. When you land, if you are a United frequent flyer, if you've got a membership with United, and you land in their Mileage Plus program. Right now it's only in Denver and some flights in Newark, but basically you land, you get a text that tells you where your flight is leaving from, how far it is from where you are. So how far a reasonable person could walk. So let's say you have a 45-minute connection. They're telling you it's a 10-minute walk. So now you can decide, you know, do you want to stop at concessions or restrooms or whatever along the way? So kind of a cool thing that I think will really help travelers. Also, one thing I want to mention to folks who fly United Airlines through Denver. For years and years and years and years since that airport has opened, all the United flights have arrived and departed from the B concourse, which makes it a little bit simpler. United now has 5 gates in the A concourse in Denver. It is entirely possible. Be very careful when looking at your boarding passes, because it's entirely possible that you may have to take a train in order to change concourses in Denver if you're flying with United Airlines. So just a little helpful hint there on something I picked up on last week when we landed on the A concourse. If you're somebody who likes to vape and you think that you can vape on airplanes, be aware of the fact that Spirit Airlines last week banned a passenger for life when they caught him vaping on the airplane.
Wow.
So beware of that. American Airlines has extended cancellations of flights on the 737 MAX jets into September. Southwest has followed suit. So has United. There is some word out now that it's possible these planes may not be back in the air until the holiday season. So that's something to think about. Wallet Hub has rated California as the most fun state out of 50. They base that on the most restaurants per capita. We are number one in movie theaters per capita. We are number one in amusement parks per capita for of any other state. We have more performing arts theaters per capita than any state. Interestingly enough, we also have more fitness centers per capita. And we're very high in casinos and golf courses, and that has caused Wallet Hub to say that California is the most fun state to visit in the country. What do you think, Tom?
I'm all for that. That's one of the reasons why people like to come here. They like to stay. They vacation here. That's why it costs a lot to live here. You know, Rancho Cordova is known as the Fun City. So it fits right in with California as a whole. That's, I think, their slogan, the Fun City.
The Fun City.
Yeah.
We need the Rancho Cordova people to come on and tell us about some of the fun things in their city, because I've never perceived Folsom Boulevard as being that fun of a place, perhaps I'm missing something.
Well, I'll have to look close at that sign on your way to work.
Something. We both live out in that area. Okay, a few quick notes here as we wrap up the travel news. Some segments of travelers are growing wary of the sharing economy. This is really interesting, I think, Tom. The millennials, who are the folks who really have driven this whole sharing economy phenomenon, which, of course, is very important to the travel industry because we have things like Airbnb and we have ride shares and we have rental car shares. And, the sharing economy is entwined in the travel industry. The millennials are starting to use the sharing economy in smaller numbers. 63% say they will use sharing economy services this summer, down from 77% 2 years ago. That's a pretty big drop. The increase comes from the baby boomers, who were perhaps a little bit late to the party with the sharing economy, but now that they've picked up on it, they like it. The millennials are moving on, and the boomers are saying, hey, wait a minute, we just got here. So we're still kind of an interesting statistic, I thought. Food workers at airlines are thinking about going on strike. And you'd say, well, how is that going to affect me? Airlines don't serve food anymore. But alas, even if you're not sitting in first class, these food workers do things like they supply the beverage carts on the airplanes. Mm-hmm. And they supply the snack carts on the airplanes. And they put things like headsets and toilet paper and things on the airplanes. So it's entirely possible that if these folks who do the food, the airline food workers, go on strike, and they voted 345 to nothing in Boston the other day to strike. They make about $12 an hour. They'd like to make $15. If they don't get what they're looking for, it's entirely possible that life on a plane, it just seems like the next step, doesn't it, Tom, when your airline sends you a text and says, we regret to inform you, but if you're going flying on our plane today and you think you might need the facilities, perhaps you should bring your own supplies with you.
Yeah, they'll probably just loosen it up and say, bring whatever you want, because you're not going to get it on board.
The toilet paper stuck to your shoe. Getting a passport will now take longer. It's been announced that getting international passports will take as long as 8 weeks. That's a 50% increase from the 4 to 6 week wait time experienced before May 31. State Department officials offered no reasoning except to say that they have an expedited processing service for an extra $60, which will cut the arrival time of your passport down by 2 to 3 weeks, which seems to be what they were doing before. One side says, the Trump administration says, that they have requested a 2.5% increase in airport checkpoint screeners for fiscal 2020, which helps with the passport situation, but the passport people say there are 14% fewer passport inspectors than there were before. It's a he said, she said. You decide which side you believe. And Four Seasons will expand its Bay Area portfolio of hotels with a second San Francisco hotel. The Lowe's Hotel in the Financial District will become a Four Seasons. It will close towards the end of the year and reopen in late 2020 as a Four Seasons hotel at the Embarcadero in San Francisco. And that is is your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. Don't forget now, you can follow along with all the stuff we talk about and much more at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, it is the busy season, the summer travel season. Airports are just a-hopping. We're going to be here in about 3 minutes to help make that a little smoother for you with some smarter traveler tips when heading to the airport. That's next on the Travel Guys.
The sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and there. You're sure to fall in love with old Cape Cod.
Yeah, Mark Hoffman's in Mold Cape Cod, falling in love. Tom Romano here in the studio. The old Cape Cod. The old guys at the old Cape. Well, welcome
Being on the Cape is not for those who are light of wallet. Actually, if you come here, you will be light of wallet. hotel rates here in Provincetown, during the week you can get hotels for, at this time of the year, it's still in the shoulder season, for around $200. But if you're on the weekend or you wait about two more weeks, you get closer to the 4th of July, it's going to start with a 3 or it might start with a 4. It's peak time here in Provincetown at the end of the road.
All right. By the way, if you're
Thomas.
Yeah, I just want to let folks
go
know.
Ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to let folks know that if they're just joining us, we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. It's a little difficult sometimes when Mark is that far away because I will speak and he doesn't really hear me until about 2 seconds later. And so he'll start to talk and then we step all over each other. But I will step out of the way as Mark, it's that time of the year where we're hitting the airports. You've been doing a lot of traveling. Is it pretty busy out there?
I have, Tom. I've been in 7 or 8 airports in the last few weeks, and I have a few things to share. I feel like a sort of a broken record here, but before I get to the airports, one quick announcement. Beach Blanket Babylon is ending its run in San Francisco at the end of the year. Tickets are starting to become at a premium. Many shows, even several months in advance, are sold out. Sports Leisure Vacations, our underwriter, has some day trips to see the show in San Francisco in August and September, evening shows and afternoon matinees. So look online at sportsleisure.com or give those folks a call. Do not miss, if you've never seen Beach Blanket Babylon and you're a fun person, why would you let a piece of San Francisco history, especially a fun piece like this, get away from you? So if you don't go with us, go with somebody. Go yourself. Get on the train and go to San Francisco and just get a ticket and enjoy some really, really great comedy. Okay, we got a few minutes here to talk about airports. And specifically, as I've bumped around the country here, people are not allowing themselves enough time at airports. And what happens is it's a domino effect. You come into an airport and you are short on time. So you're rushing around and your situation starts to impact other people. So do yourself a favor. Most of the folks who are listening to this are probably going to fly out of the Sacramento or San Francisco airports if they are flying. Make sure parking in Sacramento is not what it used to be. There are a lot more flights than there used to be from Sacramento, so parking places are at a premium. You used to go out at a certain time of the day, and certain parking places were available, and those are not going to be there now. You're going to have to park further from the terminal. You may find that your preferred lot is already full. So allowing yourself a little extra time there is important. TSA so far in Sacramento has not been an issue yet this summer. However, in some of the other airports that I was in the Miami airport the other day, TSA was a complete zoo. People without TSA pre-check were waiting the better part of an hour to get through security during the morning rush hour. So you've got to allow for those. If you don't have those little things that allow you to slip through the airport quickly, if you don't have pre-check or some type of premium status with an airline or something that gets you some line passes, then you've got to allow yourself a little bit of extra time. Saw a great tip in the Sacramento airport that I really want to share with people. The airport in the evenings, picking up people at the airports, particularly between 9 and 10 p.m., has become really busy, particularly over there in Terminal B where Southwest flies out of. Avoid all of that problem on the arrival level by arranging to pick up your passenger on the departure level in the evening. Isn't that a great idea, Tom?
I've heard that one before. Yes, you know, there's no rules that say that you can't. So oftentimes it will be slower because at that time of the evening there aren't as many departures. But that's a great tip.
Yeah, it really is, especially in Sacramento, because you're going to find the departure level virtually empty. So all you have to do is just take an escalator or an elevator up there, and it's a very easy place to meet someone. If you're headed to the airport, Sacramento or anywhere else, and let's say you've got a child that you're traveling with, maybe you've got a stroller that you're going to check, perhaps you're traveling with somebody who needs assistance at the airport. They're going to need a wheelchair, or they use a walker, so they're going to be going a little bit slower, and their movement through security may take a little bit longer. Maybe it's somebody who's had a hip replacement or has metal in some other part of their body or something like that. Perhaps you are on an international flight. You've never flown international before. You get to the airport and you find out, well, there are some extra procedures and extra measures you have to go through when you're flying internationally. If you didn't allow for that, or you didn't just allow yourself an extra 15, 20 minutes in general, then suddenly you don't have enough time. Even if you just are getting to the airport and you have some bags to check, it's summertime. There are a lot of people traveling. A lot of them are families. Things just don't move as quickly or as smoothly at the airport. So once again, I promise I'll get off of this bandwagon for a while. But as I go around the country, I see the people who haven't allowed themselves enough time at the airports causing problems not only for themselves, Tom, but for other people around them, because suddenly they're in a situation where they're about to miss their vacation, their trip to grandma's house, their business trip, their whatever. And that tends to come down on the travelers around them.
It sure does. And, you know, as simple as it may seem, be sure to examine and pay attention to what it is that you're going to take through the TSA line. That extra bottle of water you shouldn't have. oddly enough, people have been still once in a while thinks that they forgot to leave their gun behind, even if it is unloaded. But that always kind of slows things down. So, you know, do your homework and get out there early and travel safely and have a great time. Well, all right. Coming up on the back half of the Travel Guys today, it's Fake Reviews. Our favorite consumer advocate, Chris Elliott, joins us at 3:35 right after the news. You're going to enjoy this. And then Gwen Duncan coming up at about 3:50. We're going to talk code share. All of that and more as we continue on a happy Father's Day, friends, here on the Travel Guys. Thank you for joining us. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, always brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now, you can follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. And join us in this segment, Christopher Elliott, consumer advocate, kind of a regular here with the Travel Guys, and we certainly do appreciate that. Christopher, again, welcome to the Travel Guys. Thanks for being here today.
It's always good to be with you guys.
Chris, today we're going to talk to you a little bit about a recent column that you had about cities that have the most fake hotel reviews. As travelers, we depend a lot on review sites. I know many travelers who depend almost exclusively on review sites to give them an idea of the quality of what a travel experience might be, whether it's an airline, a hotel room, some type of a tour or attraction. And now along comes our favorite buddy, Chris Elliott, and says,
Are you saying that the reviews that we get online and stuff are not actual? Do you mean there's a possibility they could be like fake news?
Oh, I think it's time for me to defer to Mr. Elliott here. What do you think, Chris?
Yes, the answer is yes, absolutely. There are a lot of fake reviews online. I was actually surprised by how many of them there were. This is done by, the research is done by a company called FakeSpot. They've been around for a while, and they have this algorithm that is able to spot a fake review online. And they look specifically at TripAdvisor. So they looked at the hotel reviews there. And, they came to me a couple of days ago and said, Chris, do you realize that this is a problem? And they said up to 30% of the reviews were fake. And I said, and I kind of had an idea that this was going on, but I said, I wonder if you might be able to break that down by city. Tell me which cities have the most fake reviews. And so they did, and they came up with this list, and I was just shocked by what was on it.
It is a list that includes most of the major destinations in the United States, at least here in the top eight. Houston, with almost 40%, they have decided fake reviews. Chicago, Miami, Dallas, Boston, Los Angeles, New York, and San Francisco. Gosh, if you're a business traveler, you might hit all of those in a six-month period. Chris, you've talked to these folks at Fake Spot. How is it? You mentioned algorithms. What do we know about how they find these reviews? And can you give our listeners any tips as to how they might be able to spot them?
Absolutely. Well, it's all a little bit mysterious. And I would say that that also applies to the TripAdvisor part of the equation. TripAdvisor won't tell you how it sorts out reviews and determines whether one is fake or isn't. We do know that a lot of hotel owners are trying to get to the top of the rankings. They're trying to get the most stars if they can. And they'll actually do almost anything they can, including hiring a reputation management company. Those are professionals who will seed a site like TripAdvisor with a fake review or more than one fake review. So we know this is going on. What we don't know is exactly how a TripAdvisor is determining whether something is or isn't fake. We know that they do try to sort them out and they try to get rid of the fakes. And FakeSpot says it has a better way of determining whether something is real or not. Now, going back to this list that you mentioned, I was surprised that Houston was so high up. I actually am located in Houston right now. And we don't see people running around with fake reviews, trying to ding a property with one star. But apparently, in talking with FakeSpot, they said that because it's such a new city, and by new, they don't mean that it's a recently established city. They mean that there's all this new development going on. New hotels are going up. That there's just a lot of ups and downs, and people are trying to jockey for top position, and that's why there are 40% fake reviews.
Christopher, when it comes to fake reviews, are they always faked up, meaning pretending that they're or faking that they're better than they are? Or do they fake down, trying to diminish the value of a particular product? What do you find?
It is a little bit of both. You'll find hotels that are paying people maybe to write good reviews or getting people that they know to write good reviews so that they'll have a lot of 4 or 5 star reviews. And then you'll find that they also ask people to write bad reviews for a competitor, for a competitor's website. And that way they will rise in the rankings and their competitors will fall.
And is it your experience, Chris, there's been speculation within the industry that in some cases these reviews are written by staff that, let's pretend for a minute that a hotel hires a couple people that specifically to write these reviews, sticks them in a room or they sit at home for hours on a day and compile these and add them to a number of various different websites? Or is it folks that are hired independently by the hotels? Any ideas, any guesses as to how this might work?
Yes to everything that you just said. Yes, they have friends that go out and review the hotel. Remember, TripAdvisor does not verify whether you've stayed in a hotel or not. Uh-huh. And that's one of the big problems with TripAdvisor. But yeah, you have people who are working for an outside company. You have people who are out of the country. I've done a story about fake reviews before, and we found people in Pakistan reviewing hotels in the Caribbean. And the interesting thing is that one of the criteria that TripAdvisor does say that it uses is IP addresses, so Internet Protocol addresses. Those are the unique numbers that identify where you're connecting from. And the interesting thing is that those can be spoofed too. So you could, get on a VPN, a virtual private network, and you could say, even though I am located in Sacramento, I want it to appear as if I'm logging in from Australia, and you can easily do that in a VPN. So everything can be faked. And then this is the problem, is that there are all kinds of methods that are being used to create these fake reviews. And it's really, really hard, even for someone who's experienced, to spot all of them.
We're talking with Chris Elliott, our favorite consumer advisor and protector here on the Travel Guys this afternoon. Chris, so if FakeSpot, we're talking specifically about fake reviews, and we've kind of zeroed in a little bit on TripAdvisor. And Chris, you've shared with us that this company, FakeSpot, has a better ability, apparently, than TripAdvisor to spot these reviews, or maybe it's just not in TripAdvisor's best interest. If TripAdvisor knew there was a company that could identify these fake reviews, why would they not partner with that company to get rid of the fake reviews so that they would be more trustworthy? Or is that not in their best interest?
Well, let me put it to you this way. If you were running a jewelry store and you were selling Rolex watches and you knew that one out of every four Rolex watches was a fake, you would probably do something about it. But if you knew that you wouldn't get caught and that no one would ever know for certain if one of these Rolex watches was a fake, would you take any action? I mean, if you were an honest business person, you would. But we're talking about a billion-dollar company that is very busy selling travel, and these reviews now have become window dressing. They're just ways of getting people to come to the site and book travel. So I really don't think it has any incentive to do anything about it. It says it's doing something about it, but there's really very little evidence that it's taking the action that it would need, you know, such as trying to verify reviewers. It's not doing that.
I've always told consumers that if you're on a website and you really want to do your homework, first of all, you want to get past the first page and dig in 8 or 10 pages into the reviews to see if you can find any similarities. Can you find a string where there's 6 or 8 reviews in a several month period where there are problems with the staff, or there's problems with a particular aspect of the hotel that continually is mentioned over and over and then suddenly is not mentioned anymore or is mentioned more often, that those might be some clues as to whether or not the hotel. Tom, when you go online and you're looking at things like this, how much value do you put in reviews when you're looking at something?
You know, it's really tough. I try to look at different reviews. I look specifically for one particular thing, and that is, are there any bed bug reports? And like you, Mark, I'll look to see, you know, how far back that goes and whether the conversation about bed bugs kind of goes away. And then I always, you know, book direct. So I will call and talk to the people at the hotel and see where they are with their bed bug situation, if they had any. And I'll always ask for to find out if they have any remodeled rooms, if they've recently remodeled, and make a point to see if I can get one of those. It's tough for people to decide what to do these days.
Chris, before we let you go, if you were a consumer and you were looking at reviews and you were trying to make a decision, how would you handle that?
Well, I'd definitely cast a very wide net. Don't just go to TripAdvisor and make a decision based on a review that you read there. TripAdvisor, as I said, wants you to book your travel through TripAdvisor. But if you're going on to TripAdvisor and just looking at the reviews there and then making a decision, that's probably not the way to go. Cast a really wide net. Booking.com has some really good ones. They actually verify if you actually stay there. You can't review unless you've actually stayed at the property. Ask a travel agent, too. I mean, yeah, they still have travel agents, and some of them actually travel to some of these hotels and can give you essentially a word-of-mouth recommendation. So if you can find a good agent, that will be really great. And then, you know, ask friends and family, too. I mean, I would and some people will even go a little bit further and will do some research online, find out if a hotel's been in the news for anything. Sometimes when you have an infestation of rodents or something like that, that'll make the news. Or health department warning, that'll make the news. It may not show up in an online review, but it'll show up in a news article.
Ah, okay. Well, then there is some good wisdom. Chris Elliott of Elliott.org, if you have a problem with if you're getting ready to travel or you've traveled, you have some kind of a consumer issue, you're not getting the results that you're looking for, the folks at Chris's website can often help you. It's fascinating reading. They have an update, a newsletter that comes out every day. You can sign up for it. It's at Elliott.org. And Chris, thank you so much for being generous once again with your time. And we'll check back with you the next time you write something that we feel needs a little clarifying. Help make our folks smarter travelers.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Christopher Elliott, consumer advocate, always here to help make our listeners smarter travelers, that's for sure.
Speaking of smarter travelers, this show today is pretty much dead. There's a lot of stuff that will make you a little bit smarter here. Have you ever heard of CodeShare, Tom?
Only from you, like last week.
Uh-huh.
So I know very little about it.
Okay.
I'm anxious to find out more.
CodeShares is the way that airlines, this is the way that a foreign airline will sell tickets on Delta Airlines, or United Airlines will sell tickets on South African Airlines. They may not actually operate the flight, but they have a flight number. It's incredibly confusing to consumers. So we have asked Gwen Duncan, our resident travel advisor, to come by and explain a little bit about code shares. If you're flying at any time this summer, this is information that might be useful to you. Coming up next, right here on The Travel Guys.
I wish that I could fly into the sky so very high, just like a dragonfly.
Again, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. And time to bring back on our travel advisor, who we have on quite frequently because she's just so darn smart.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I know. Pandering to Gwen.
Yeah.
Gwen Duncan. Gwen Duncan, ladies and gentlemen, with cordially yours, Travel. And I know our subject is, to me, extremely confusing. And, Gwen, we're counting on you to simplify it the best you can. Mark?
Yeah, well, we're going to talk a little bit about code shares. If you're an amateur traveler,
yeah,
Tom.
If you're Tom,
and you go into the airport and you're looking for your flight, and suddenly you see that it appears as though 8 different airlines are operating a flight to the same place you're going at exactly the same time. And you're wondering what's up with that. And it's really only one airline with one flight, and they are code sharing. And
I'm already confused.
According to one of the websites that had a definition of this, all you need to know about code share flights, a code share agreement is an arrangement where two or more airlines share the same flight. A seat can be purchased from an airline on a flight that is actually operated by another airline under a different flight number or code. Gwen, is that it in a nutshell?
I think that's very clear.
How do you know that you're scheduled on a code share, Gwen?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, if you're looking at your itinerary, a couple of things that you'll notice. It'll say, let's use United and Lufthansa as an example. You bought the ticket from United, and you can find out first by looking at the flight number, and if it's a 3,000 or higher, chances are it's a code share. If it's less than that, it's a United flight. But right underneath the flight, it'll say operated by, if it's a code share, it'll say operated by, like, say, Lufthansa. So you know you're in a code share. If they have to, by law, say if it's a code share and who the airline is on your ticket.
And there are domestic code shares as well as international, for example.
Oh, sure.
Frequently, these regional carriers that feed you into major airports are smaller carriers, and you'll look on your ticket and you'll say that you're flying with United, and it'll say operated by Air Wisconsin or operated by SkyWest or something like that. So that, again,
Or American operated by Alaskan Air.
Exactly. Yes. So I go to the airport, and how do I know where to check in and who to pay for my baggage? And I mean, how do you figure this out?
Okay. Now, the first thing you need to know, and it's got to be really clear to your audience, is that you always check in with the operating airline that operates the first flight in your itinerary.
Okay. If I bought my ticket on United and I'm leaving from Sacramento and I'm flying, let's say, to Washington Dulles before I go overseas. And when I go overseas from Washington, I'm flying on a different airline. But because my first flight is on United, I'm going to go check in at the United counter. Okay.
That's right.
That's pretty simple.
Same thing is, right. Now, if you're leaving from San Francisco.
Uh-oh.
And you're and it was purchased through United,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing, like, say, a nonstop to Frankfurt.
Okay.
It'll say operated by Lufthansa. You have to check in at Lufthansa.
Oh, because that's your first flight.
That's your first flight, and it's the operating airline.
Okay,
so
now you've got things like seat assignments. You know, you're making a reservation. Now, if I were working with you, then you would do all this for me. But let's pretend for a minute I'm one of these many people who are trying to navigate.
I'm just having her do it. That's all it is.
Yeah, okay. So, but for those who are trying to do this on your own, let's say, for example, there's some kind of problem. What if you get a notice that your flight is canceled? or you, let's say you get to the airport, you're getting ready for your first flight, and you get a notice that your second flight operated by the other airline is canceled. How do you?
So I'm going to get you. I'm going to give you some hints on all of those things that you just mentioned. Let's start with the cancel.
Okay.
If you're if you hear that you notice that your flight is canceled, and it's the operating airline, then you stop. You stand in line, but you call the airline while you're in line, because you might be able to get a hold of somebody and even solve your problem before you get to the front of the line.
Okay.
So my advice is to always do that. So the airline that sold you the ticket is responsible to get you to the destination. So you would call, like if it said United, you would call United.
Okay.
You know, if your ticket says United, because they're operating it. Now, baggage. When you are checking in with Lufthansa, because it's operated by Lufthansa, you have to follow their baggage rules. And so even though it says United on your ticket, it'll say operated by Lufthansa. You're checking in at Lufthansa. You have to follow the rules for Lufthansa.
Their limits on baggage size or weight or whatever
would be different than United, yes.
Yes, because European airlines in many cases have slightly different rules than our U.S. carriers.
Right. Now, what really comes the problem is, let's say that you are on United going, and so you follow their rules, and your return is on a coach here, Lufthansa.
Okay.
Then you have to know that the baggage is going to be different when you're coming home. You know, it may be different when you're coming
home. I work in this industry, Gwen, and this is confusing as all get out. I mean, it's entirely possible that you could do, if you were doing a three-segment trip to Europe, let's pretend you're flying across the country to get an international flight to fly to a major European city, and now you're flying to a secondary city from there, it's entirely possible you could fly on three different airlines. Or one airline one way, one airline the other way. Listen, we've only got a short time here, another 30, 45 seconds. Tom is sitting here with a really puzzled look on his face.
Yeah, by the way, for those that may have tuned in the middle of this, we're talking with Gwen Duncan. We're talking about code sharing. Go to travelguysradio.com. We'll have a lot of this stuff posted there. You can read it at your leisure and maybe get more out of it.
And maybe figure it out and call us back and explain it to us.
Yeah, honestly. You know,
exactly.
Kind of in conclusion, you know, Gwen, give us some advice.
Yeah, if you're a consumer and you're out there and you're faced with the opportunity, you know, to fly all on one carrier or to pick a code share, maybe it's a few bucks cheaper. What goes into making that decision? We got about 30 seconds.
Okay. My advice is that you avoid code share flights whenever you can. You'll see that on a Kayak search or something. You'll see American, you'll see Cathay, Pacific. They're all the exact same flight. It's just coded with a different airline. Try to do it with the airline that is the operating airline. And then you'll want to be sure that you're signed up for the frequent flyer, because that's the only way you can earn your miles is if you're on the operating one. But the situation with that is that the only time you'll want to do a code share is whenever the two cities that you're wanting to fly to don't have one single carrier that can get you there.
Okay. All right, Gwen.
Thank
you for your wisdom today. I truly appreciate it. It also sounds like, Tom, she would never say this herself, but this would be the situation where you really need a good travel advisor.
Gwen Duncan, cordially yours, travel. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Gwen,
thank
for your time today. Check back with you in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gwen. That wraps up another edition of the Travel Guys. Next week, Steve LaRosa is going to be with us.
He is going to be live in studio with you. I will be in Oregon next week, live with you from Portland, Oregon, and then the following week from New York City. Dance like nobody's watching.
Enjoy those Marion berries. See you next time, folks.